And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective Podcast. I am Ted Berg, joined, as always, by Tim Britton, the Athletics Mets beat writer. Tim, how's it going?
Pretty good, Ted. It's been a an uneventful couple weeks for me personally. Has anything strange happened to you since we last talked or anything like that?
Matter of fact, Tim, the day before my birthday, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, this upcoming Thursday, I was struck by a truck while I was innocently working out in a public park. Luckily, I'm okay. I'm still a little banged up, but everything's going to be fine. And I walked home jumpy. I'm jumpy now. If at any point in this podcast there's like a car horn in the background and you hear me freak out, that's what's going on.
What kind of truck?
It was a pickup truck, but like a big one, like actually kind of like a pickup truck baseball players drive. You know, like the baseball players all have the extra huge pickup trucks. It was like one of those.
And it hit you where?
On the lower back, because I was doing push-ups. So it they didn't see me, and they were turning around in this exercise area, and I had my headphones in. I saw a light from behind me. I was like, it must be like I thought it was like an e-bike guy turning around. And so I looked over my shoulder like, this e-bike guy's coming kind of close. And then it's a truck. And it sort of hit me on the lower back and knocked me to the ground. Somehow I turned over, and I'm just yelling, stop the whole time. Just a little, a few moments before the wheel got to my head, they stopped. And then they yelled at me for doing push-ups in the exercise area of the park.
Obviously, Ted, the exercise area of a New York City park is where trucks do their turnarounds. It's not where anyone does push-ups. Like, we've talked about this story, as you could probably tell. This is not like the first time we're doing this banter. The thing that always galls me is like someone almost ran you over with their truck and they blamed you.
Right. And that's really that's what sticks in my craw too. Like if you had just been like, hey, I'm really sorry I hit you with the truck, are you okay? Then it's like no harm, no foul, but when you're kind of a jerk about it, it bothers me.
Yeah, understandably.
But not as much as being, it wasn't as bothersome as being hit by the truck. Like that part, that hurt the worst, to paraphrase Norm MacDonald. But the lack of respect hurt the second most.
But you're doing okay. You're well enough to like crouch in a closet to record this.
I am. I am sitting in my the empty closet of my across the hall neighbor's now empty apartment, draped in blankets. In the dark.
I think that's...
And it's still kind of echoey.
That's kind of how we've all reacted to the last 11 months. We're all, metaphorically speaking, at least.
This is where I'm at now. This is what I do. Let's talk about the Mets. And unfortunately, it's just another lousy non-baseball sort of story. I mean, it is baseball, but Mickey Callaway, the Mets manager for 2 years before this season, it's in The Athletic. I don't want to say it's a great read. It's a extremely well researched and well put story from Brittany Jaroli and Katie Strang. I hope I'm pronouncing those names right. Mickey Callaway has been accused very credibly of harassing five, at least five, possibly more female reporters sending unsolicited photos, soliciting naked photos, and just a lot of like slimy behavior. And it's, you know, Callaway's not with the Mets anymore, but there's a lot to it, Tim, and I know you have a closer perspective on it.
Yeah, so I think the thing, first off, you're right. He's no longer with the Mets. I do find it weird that some people's first Twitter reaction to reading a story like this is to complain that he's pictured in a Mets uniform. Like, that's not the takeaway here. From a Mets perspective, I think the takeaway is that, you know, previously this same offseason, they have fired their general manager, who they had just hired, for sexual harassment of a single reporter that we know of. And now the same person who hired that general manager, Sandy Alderson, also hired this man to be the manager.
Mm-hmm.
That's not like deflecting blame off of Callaway. It's, you know, this is Callaway's issue primarily, but it's also secondarily a Mets issue because they hired him. They gave him the biggest promotion, the same way they gave Jared Porter the biggest promotion that he'd ever gotten. And it's the same person who hired both of them. And I think it just reiterates the flaws in whatever process of vetting that the Mets had with Jared Porter. Like, I think with Porter, you know, I came out shortly after the ESPN story and criticized the Mets for a lack of thorough vetting, that they didn't know anything about this and were caught unawares. And I think we talked about it on the podcast at the time. I wasn't sure how much of that was on them, but one of the reasons I felt okay criticizing them a little harsher than I might have otherwise was that they had also hired Mickey Callaway. And I knew then, I knew 2 weeks ago, I knew 2 years ago almost, that there was this kind of stuff with Mickey Callaway. And I think, you know, for the Mets, for Alderson, as it's said in that story by some of the women, that it's the worst kept secret in baseball, that even a little bit of vetting would have revealed this kind of thing in his past in Cleveland. So I think it's even more so than in the instance of Jared Porter, it stands out. Why didn't you catch this beforehand? It's you know, maybe Sandy Alderson wasn't aware of anything when they hired Mickey Callaway. I doubt that he was aware, but he should have been aware. Because it did not take long. You know, there were people on the beat right away in spring training of 2018 who knew. I didn't know that early, but I knew I had heard whispers over the course of the 2018 season about some of his misbehavior. And then I knew more concretely in the first part of the 2019 season. And I think, you know, I've spent, this goes back several weeks now, wondering kind of what my responsibility is as a beat reporter in those situations.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the classic idea of the beat reporter is like, we're there to write about baseball, you know? And, you know, people always tell us to stick to sports, and generally we want to. I want to write about what Jordan Yamamoto's addition means for the Mets starting pitching depth. I don't want to write about this other stuff, but this other stuff is significantly more important culturally than Jordan Yamamoto's repertoire, and also within the sports world. And so, like, I look back and I feel personally remorseful that I, knowing what I knew about Mickey Callaway, that I didn't work on this story earlier myself, that it took the reporting of Brittany and Katie to unearth kind of the depth and breadth of it. Like, I knew of an instance here or there. I knew of a few of the ones that had happened essentially with the Mets. But, you know, I had written in the middle of 2019 that they should fire Callaway. And I kind of rationalized, like, I've already written that they should fire him. Like, I'm not going to bury him anymore. And of course, by not doing that, that allows that behavior to continue. As it has since I first found out. So I feel like, you know, like I think a lot of people in our profession grappling with my own role in perpetuating this kind of behavior. And I, you know, not to, I don't want to make myself the center of the conversation, but I think a lot of people in my position should be grappling with these issues. A lot of people in baseball should be thinking about what could I be doing better to make sure that this doesn't happen in the first place, or if it has happened, not promoting those people any further along the line of the chain of command. You know, people will ask, like, how could the Mets have known? It was not difficult to know this about him by the time they hired him, really. And then, you know, as some people like to put the onus on the reporters in this instance. Why wasn't it reported to the Mets? Why wasn't it reported to their own editors or bosses? The Mets clearly knew about something in August of 2018 that they investigated and did not pass down any tangible punishment toward Mickey Callaway at that point. And they said they were investigating an incident that had happened in Cleveland with him. And then, you know, reporters, like, the beat is a good job. And if you go to your editor and say, this is what the manager is doing, the manager is saying, let's go get beers, I'll tell you all about the Mets. There are editors in this business, too many editors, who will say you should probably get beers with him or something like that. Or, you know, if you're not comfortable with this dynamic with the manager, I don't know if we can have you on the beat, in which case you get punished for that behavior. So that explains why a lot of this doesn't get reported up the chain the way that it might be in other circumstances. And that's why it is difficult to root out of the sport in a way that it should be.
Do you think that Sandy Alderson loses his job over this? Do you think that Sandy Alderson should lose his job over this? That's a sympathetic way of putting it by saying lose his job. Do you think that Sandy Alderson should be fired for this or will be?
I don't think he will be. I don't know that he should be. I haven't thought through whether he should be or not. I think it's certainly something he should grapple with even more now than after Jared Porter, because I think in our news conference with Alderson after the Porter firing, you could tell he was grappling with the issue a little bit, wondering basically what they could have done differently, and was taken aback when he realized that they had not spoken to any women, and that was maybe one of the things they could have done differently. But I think this is another blow to that makes you think even more, like, well, this is one that we probably should have caught, that we would have thought that whatever process we had in place, you know, maybe it's difficult to catch the Jared Porter one, someone who was as highly recommended as he was. The Callaway stuff probably should have been caught. So hopefully, you know, Alderson's statement on Monday night was talking about looking even harder at the vetting process. And I think a complete overhaul of that process for not just the Mets, but, you know, other teams hired Jared Porter, other teams hired Mickey Callaway, that I think every team in baseball is spending, should be spending significant amount of time right now thinking about what we learn about the people we're about to hire in all capacities. You know, it's not just with the Mets, it's happened to be very high profile hires, but it's also people you're hiring in your front office in smaller roles. It's people you bring in as other coaches in your minor league system. It's players you bring in, these are people that are the representatives of your organization. This is an entertainment industry. And if fans don't want to root for the players or the team that you're putting out there, the organization that you're putting out there, then your product is in trouble. And I think the Mets have taken some blows reputationally here in a way that certainly they didn't expect at the start of 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all fair, and I think that it's also fair to say they might not have expected it, but they probably deserve it, right? They probably, you know, like these are you know, and I wouldn't go calling. I'm not about to go calling for Alderson's job. I would believe him that it was, you know, oversight and not malicious. But at this point, yeah, now, like, hopefully they've learned their lesson, I guess, right? Like, and you know, we said the exact same thing last time with when talking about Jared Porter. Like, this is, you know, hopefully everybody starts asking about this stuff, because it's clearly happening and it will continue happening, and it should stop happening. It's not fair, and it's a horrible way to make the game inclusive to, you know, all sorts of fans and obviously media as well. So, you know, It's gotta change. I mean, you gotta stop. You gotta change your process clearly if this keeps happening. So hopefully it will. Let's move on. Can we move on to something significantly more confusing and significantly less heavy?
Sure. What's that?
GameStop and Steve Cohen leaving Twitter.
It's funny because like in December I signed up for I think it's Matt Levine's financial newsletter because it occasionally talked about 0.72 and Steve Cohen stuff, and I was like, I should get more financially literate. I was writing the profile of Steve Cohen that I was working on in December. I should know more about this stuff. And like, I don't know, 10 days ago, the Friday, he talked about GameStop a little. I was like, that's a weird story. I don't understand that at all. And I joked about it with one of my friends by like Monday. I was like, I was like just sitting here reading about GameStop stock. And he was like, what is going on with your life? And then by Wednesday, literally everyone in the world knew the intricate details of this story.
And it wound up with Steve Cohen quitting Twitter, right? Am I? Because I wasn't necessarily the most online that day, and so did I miss? Was there a middle step between Steve Cohen sort of being part of or seen as part of the Wall Street establishment, which wound up closing or influencing? And there's so much conjecture here, and I just don't really fully understand it because I don't own any stocks. But like the Wall Street establishment sort of pressures, it sounds like pressures Robin Hood, this retail trading for individuals. They have to stop selling their, making trades on GameStop. GameStop stock crashes, and Steve Cohen is sort of seen, I think, by these individual investors, the people driving up the price of the GameStop stock. He becomes a representative of the forces that have shut them out, and they go after him on Twitter. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the intermediate step is that Steve Cohen engaged with Dave Portnoy from Barstool Sports.
Yes.
And that is, I can't argue enough against that ever being a good idea. Like that's
just... it's funny you should mention that. I don't know if you've seen the reviews of the Metrospective on iTunes, but one day after or the same day that I criticized Barstool Sports in regards to Cohen, some guy who's all, if you look up his username, it's a bunch of really favorable reviews of Barstool Sports podcasts, and one that's just like, Ted Berg is horrible, and a one star, saying I have no personality, but also that I'm pompous, which to me seems like a contradiction, because pompous is a personality. But yeah, so
that's kind of pompous pointing that out, Ted. You got it.
Absolutely. That's why I'm not denying pompous. Like that's fine. I know that. Steve Cohen ran afoul of this Barstool like weird thing that happens where they just all come for you. Is that right?
Yeah. So I actually did not look deep into what the specific tweets levied against Cohen were. I saw some of the ones from Portnoy and from Barstool's main account, but essentially they were, we've all been on Twitter, we know what happens. So Cohen said he was, I think it's quote unquote, taking a break from Twitter after threats against his family and himself, which should not happen, but of course does happen on Twitter all the time. I think when Cohen started the Twitter account, it was something that surprised a lot of people who are close to him, because he's someone who's never been that open with the public and with the media, for sure. This is a guy who bought up pictures of himself, bought the copyrights of pictures of himself. So that's why you see like the same five pictures of him in every story about him and have for
yeah,
two
I've
decades. So people were surprised and kind of encouraged, like, oh, like this is a cool other side of him that a lot, it's his personality, but we don't get, so few people get to see it. It was working out well, but with Twitter, it's always like, yeah, let's see wade through it for a while. Brody Van Wagenen came out playing a big game on Twitter. And then when the season started, it became less and less as it went on. And with Cohen, that it just the entire process was accelerated to the nth degree, and he is no longer on Twitter.
Yeah, once upon a time, that same fast arc happened to Josh Tolley. It was like, and it was so early in Twitter that it was like, can you believe it? There's a Met on Twitter now, and he was on there for like 3 weeks, and then I think his quote was something like, you know, I have to deal with 3 hours of people telling me I suck at the ballpark. I don't need it 24 hours a day. And I don't think he ever returned to Twitter. I think that was it for Josh Tolley on Twitter.
I mean, like, can't blame him. Yeah, like, anyone who doesn't have to be on Twitter probably shouldn't be on Twitter. Like, there's really no, I do not recommend it to anyone basically outside of journalism.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Well, that's a good segue. That's a good segue because I want to move to someone who is very online. And the Mets traded Steven Matz this week. He's not who's very online. But the speculation that follows is that in trading Matz, who was owed a few million dollars, I'm sure you know the specifics better than I do, that, you know, maybe they are planning to make a move for Trevor Bauer, who is the guy I'm referring to, who is... someone most would probably say two online.
Yeah, so the Matz was due to make $5.2 million. They deal him to Toronto for Sean Reed Foley, Yency Diaz, and Josh Winkowski. I believe that is his name. And you know, the return in that Reed Foley and Diaz are guys who might have been 40-man collateral for Toronto going forward. They get a chance to see what they can do for the Mets.
Winkowski, but guys who were prospects at some point,
Reed Foley in particular had been a relatively high rated prospect, hasn't turned into something at the major league level yet. You know, they're kind of flyers. You see what they can do. Winkowski has a little bit more of a prospect profile right now. He's a little farther away. It's a move that, you know, the primary thing here is clearing that $5.2 million with Matz. The secondary thing is those pitchers in return. And you're clearing the $5.2 million because A, you know, Matz had the year he had last year. B, you've acquired someone like Joey Lucchesi, who I think it's Lucchesi. I was just on a fantasy podcast where they pronounced it Lucchesi. So I'm going with Lucchesi instead of Lucchesi. But I'm willing to
I trust you. To defer. You sound confident.
You know, Lucchesi, who fits some of the same things as Matz in terms of, you know, a guy who's been a relatively league average left-handed starter in 2018 and 2019. Did not, you know, Lucchesi barely pitched, if at all, at the major league level in 2020 because the Padres had a deeper rotation. And so he kind of fills the same role as Matz, but cheaper and with minor league options. So a bit more flexible. So Matz became not as necessary and a bit more redundant, which meant, you know, the Mets, who had talked to the Blue Jays about such a trade back in November before they even tendered Matz, were able to kind of revisit that and get rid of him. And then you think, what does this do for the payroll? They've got a little under $30 million under the luxury tax threshold. Probably not enough to sign Trevor Bauer, but I think the first thing you have to approach with a Trevor Bauer signing is, can an organization that has been through what the Mets have been through in the month of January and now into February, where they fired a general manager for sexual harassment, where their former manager was brought up, was credibly accused of sexual harassment while he was the manager, and where the team owner is off Twitter because he was bullied by people on Twitter, whether you can hire someone who is relatively well known for bullying on Twitter.
No, I don't think you can. And I don't think it's a good fit. I think that, you know, the concerns, look, I mean, it's important, I think, to draw a distinction between, you know, Trevor Bauer. There's has never been accused of anything like Mickey Callaway or Jared Porter were, right? But it is, it just feels like a recipe more than anything, you know, and more than that, it's bad PR, more than that, it alienates people. I don't want to diminish that, you know, it that alone should be enough reason not to do it. But I don't think that even if you feel as the front office, like, okay, this guy's good enough that we have to stomach that blow and risk alienating people because that's what's going to take to put us over the edge and win. I don't, you know, like it makes your rotation awesome, especially if he's the Cy Young winner he was last year. I just feel like it's a bad fit. I just feel like there's, and I say this while, you know, as a longtime baseball reporter, having had some really interesting conversations with Trevor Bauer. He is, by all accounts, an uninteresting guy. He has a lot to say about pitching. He's a lot to say about a lot of things, some of which get him in trouble sometimes. But I think when you're in the reporting business, you do come to appreciate the people who aren't going to give you stock quotes and aren't going to give you cliches. And he's certainly that. He is, and I hate this card. I hate it when members of the New York media just talk about how people won't be able to handle the New York media. If you have ever been to a Cleveland Indians spring training camp or a Cincinnati Reds spring training camp, and Tim, you've just covered the Sox and the Mets, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you the Indians, like I went and covered the Indians in Goodyear 1 year and sort of swung through, you know, this is I was working for USA Today. I sort of do like a drop by thing for spring training. I show up and sort of try to just see what's going on and find a story I can write about. You go into Indians camp and they sit you down at a table with Terry Francona and he's like, okay, what's going on? Because there's no one else there. There's the MLB.com guy. The Cleveland Plain Dealer didn't even have a reporter there when I was down in spring training. I think this was in 2018. They were sending recorders, you know, sending things back, I think, at the time, like sending clips back. And so it's just a very different environment. He's a guy who can talk a lot and I think will... I don't know. It's just there's the New York media does have a bit of a combative way about it. Sometimes they can be looking for the quote to turn around and throw back in someone's face. And I don't think it's like anyone doing it maliciously. It's just sort of like a reality of the market that it does happen. And I can only imagine Bauer just, you know, sort of just getting himself in trouble and being a guy who, you know, maybe reads and buys into a little too much of his own press. And it just sort of escalating and becoming one of these, to me, and maybe I'm wrong, but to me, it just looks like one of these Mets nightmare situations where, like, it's just there. You can spend that money and make up those wins elsewhere. I think, like, go after Jackie Bradley Jr., go after some better starting pitching depth, a solid, you know, back end guy that you know will be there. I just can't see it working. Like, I just I'm trying to be as fair as possible, but I just don't see. I can't think of a way that ends well.
Yeah, I think the, like, can he handle the market question gets overblown a lot. But at the same time, I thought it was, like, complete BS before I started working as a reporter.
The difference between Cleveland and the Mets is three reporters or 50 reporters, right? Like, someone, if you're sitting at your locker long enough at a Mets camp, if it's not COVID and people are in there, someone's going to come talk to you. They're just going to ask you questions, and Bauer's going to answer them, and he's going to answer them in detail. And sometimes I think he might answer them in a little too much detail. And as a reporter, you hate criticizing someone for that, but it's something that gets people in trouble.
Yeah, like, you know, I was going to say, like, I thought that was an indulgent media started kind of criticism until I covered the 2011 Red Sox with Carl Crawford and Adrian Gonzalez and guys who were very clearly not prepared to play in Boston after spending the bulks of their careers in San Diego and Tampa Bay, respectively. And you see the impact that has on their happiness, their production, and how it radiates out to other players on the team. With Bauer, I think your concern would be not just kind of the candor there, but look at how he has responded to criticism on Twitter from, you know, college kids, people with very little platform. And I think that would make you feel a little bit concerned about how how he would react to the first time the New York Post puts something on the back page about him that is not flattering. You know, how is he built to respond to that? I think it would be really interesting to see how he responds to that, both as a you know, both publicly and on the field. But, you know, also in Boston, like covering David Price was a guy that it heard beforehand that there might be, you know, he might bristle a little bit at the scrutiny, added scrutiny you get there compared to where he had played previously. And I did not think that was going to be a big factor. I thought the Red Sox should sign Price anyway. And then over the course of his time there, I wasn't there in 2018 when he pitched really well for them in the postseason. They won the World Series. So I have to eliminate myself from that. But for the first couple of years, it did not go smoothly. And he was, while he was well-liked in the clubhouse, for the most part, he wasn't loved by the organization or various people in the organization. It made it rockier for that team. And I think it set a negative tone for some of those teams there. They were relatively unhappy division-winning teams in 2016
and 2017. Yeah, and that's an important thing to mention, right? It's like it's hard to say how much any of this stuff affects actual on-field play, except at the most extreme cases of, you know, baseball getting into someone's head somehow. But you certainly prefer a happy environment. And I think in Bauer's case, you can make the case that you prefer an environment in which your fans can feel confident that they're not going to have the ace pitcher of their team come after them randomly on Twitter. And so, right, like just you just don't need that, especially when now you've become and maybe not, you know, entirely by your own fault, you've become the creepy sexting team this off season, and this one with this clearly like endemic problem in hiring, and you know, just don't why go down this road, right? You're gonna have a good team. There are other guys out there, right? I get that he's the big fish. I mean, you know, and it's always concerning to spend big on starting pitching. Why would this be the guy where you're like, oh, let's go for it? It's, you know, like this, the one we want to invest our long term, you know, $30+ million a year deal in, the starting pitcher. And maybe there's a case for it because Bauer's his other thing that's notable and part of what makes him such an interesting guy to talk to is. You know, he has all these techniques that he does with driveline baseball in Washington that have made him this incredibly durable and very talented pitcher and have helped him improve throughout his career. So maybe there's a case that he is the guy who can go for a long-term deal and stay healthy. There's just a lot of uncertainty in that always. But, man, no, I just don't see it working.
Yeah, so I think – and there are other ways. You know, first of all, signing him would – it would put you over the luxury tax almost certainly. You'd have to try to find a way to sneak under by dealing someone else, which is complicated because I don't know if you've noticed, not a lot of teams are taking on salary this winter. So I don't think there's going to be a big line of people who want to pay Jairus Familia $11 million in 2021, for instance. You know, it makes things, you know, I don't think that's an excuse not to sign him. I think obviously the previous stuff we mentioned resonates more. But there are other ways to build out your team. You mentioned Bradley. There's still other starting pitchers on the market that are intriguing to an extent, whether it's a guy like James Paxton or Taiwan Walker or Jake Odorizzi still there. You know, those are guys that they're not aces the way that Bauer is. They're not coming off Cy Young seasons. But when you look at your rotation at the moment, you kind of have the four guys you want starting in a playoff series if Noah Syndergaard comes back healthy. So to me, I think independent of the off-the-field stuff, I think there's a reasonable argument to be made that the best baseball team you can build for 2021 and 2022 with the Mets doesn't involve signing Trevor Bauer. It probably is a series of smaller moves that don't resonate quite as much, but that could pay off bigger by strengthening other weaknesses on this team, like center field, like a right-handed infield bat to play second or third alongside Jeff McNeil, and like another starter.
I'm glad you say that, because you know what? Because I'm sick of the headaches. I'm sick of the headaches. Like, this is supposed to be the Steve Cohen era. Things are supposed to be different, right? And it feels like it's not that different, and we're getting more headaches. I just want a good Mets team with no drama. I want no drama, and Bauer is drama. That's going to happen.
Is the, like, I think the Twitter question last time was, is the era of LOL Mets over?
It will never
what
end.
What did we say? I forget.
You said you thought it was, and I said it will go on forever. And I, so far, 1 week deep, or 2 weeks deep, I believe I am correct.
That's not how I remember. I'm pretty sure that I was correct, regardless of what my answer was.
I don't know.
You were being pompous about it, really.
I was, more decidedly.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
The last topic is we're blowing past our 30 minutes already. So just real quick, why didn't the Mets trade for Nolan Arenado?
I mean, that's when you see the return in that deal. An Arenado trade was always going.
Were the Cardinals just like the first people to call? did you not call some other teams and see if you could? And who knows? Who knows how much the Rockies like these particular group of players that they're getting from the Cardinals? But do you not think like, wait, if we're gonna trade this guy, do you want to call like a second team?
I mean, do you want to call like football teams? They're giving more for Matt Stafford than you're getting for Nolan Arenado. It's wild to me that was the trade cost with the Rockies picking up as much money as they did. It was a complicated process with the opt-out looming there. But if you had told me Colorado was going to pick up $50 million and you wouldn't really have to give up a prospect of note, I'm trying to think of, you know, Austin Gomber probably is like a Franklin Killomay kind of type in the Mets organization. Maybe a little bit better than Killomay.
They've liked him for a long time. Like I happen to remember the Cardinals talking up Gomber like in like 2017 spring training. I think he's from Jupiter, Florida, where they play or something like that. And so there was like a fun Cardinals story about him, this guy turning heads in camp. So I think a little bit, you know, a little bigger if only because he's been with the organization for a while. But yeah, I mean, this is a deal that it feels like 29 or 28, I guess, teams in baseball could match.
Yeah, and I guess Dick Monfort said they were not going to trade Arenado to the Dodgers. And so they found any other team and took the first offer, essentially. Like,
it feels like the deal, like in fantasy, if you're like, oh, I just want to start a conversation with this guy. Let me just, like, I'll propose, like, a totally ridiculous deal that he's never going to accept. And then you, like, you check your email and it's deal accepted. And you're like, oh, man. Okay. And yeah, like, that's what that feels like. The Cardinals were just like, wait, what? All right, yeah, okay, sweet. Let's go through with it then. Sign the paperwork. Get the physicals.
What is it Homer Simpson when he's Lurleen Lumpkin's manager who's like, I'll negotiate this, but just so you know, I'm desperate to sell and I will take your first offer. And the guy's like, I'll give you $15. And he says, sure. Like, that's
right.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah. Good for the Cardinals, I guess, for being in the right place at the right time, it seems like.
Being in the NL Central is definitely the right place at the right time.
Yeah. That's just, you added one guy and now you're going to run away with your division.
Yeah, it's a weird competitive dynamic in the National League where you've got two teams apiece in the East and West that look really good. And in the East, you know, you've got Washington and Philadelphia are not far behind, even though Philly's just kind of bringing back the same crew as last year at the moment.
But certainly not tanking, right? Like certainly not rebuilding. So
you know, you going for it is such a rare phenomenon in the sport that it's really frustrating to see that you know, that a guy like Arenado could be made available. Hey, the Mets got Lindor at a relatively discounted price, mm-hmm. for sure.
They could have gotten both of them. They could have had both.
They could have had both, and the biggest prospect they would have traded was Josh Wolf. You know, it would not have taken a top five prospect in their system for either of the for Lindor, Carrasco, or Arenado, and that tells you a lot about the trade market in Major League Baseball.
It's messed up. It's messed up. And you know, I'm saying this as like a complaining Mets fan. Why couldn't they get both? Rightfully, fans of every team but the Rockies and Cardinals right now are saying, why didn't my team get Nolan Arenado? Even if you have a good third baseman, like, he's one of the best players in the league. He's got a big contract. He's got an opt out. It's complicated, but it's someone else's money, and he's really good. He hits a lot of home runs. The whole Coors Field road splits thing is overblown. Guys get punished more on the road than it's disproportionate. It's a whole thing. It's been adequately researched. He's going to continue being good. And it's messed up that he's not on the Mets. But it's also, if you're a White Sox fan, you're like, what's the deal? Why couldn't the White Sox have him?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a classic Cardinals addition, too, and that he'll just go there and have like eight or six or seven, whatever's left on that deal, very good seasons for them and be
40 homers, go in the hall as a Cardinal.
The same way that everyone they acquire goes along that track, it seems.
Right. He'll win two championships, like spread out, like one at the beginning, one at the end. It'll be like an 87 win team that sneaks into the playoffs and then gets hot and has like Jeff Weaver starting World Series games.
No, we're not thinking about the 2006 playoffs at all.
No. Yeah.
How could
we? Tim, we've gone over time, so we won't take a question from Twitter this week. But thanks to everyone for listening. Please, if you get a chance, do rate us and review us wherever you listen to podcasts, if that's an option. Because while I know the guy who said I'm horrible didn't listen to this show, it doesn't feel good that that's the only review that's gone up since I started hosting the show.
Totally not pompous. No.
Yeah, Ted is unpompous. Or just say pompous and full of personality. That's fine too. Tim, thank you so much, and it was good talking to you.
Adios, Ted.
Peace.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.